This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The nation's suicide rate is up 33% from 1999 to 2017. It's increasing across most all demographics, including the young. Now local school districts are taking steps to address this mounting crisis. Joining Cincinnati Edition today to discuss this are Cincinnati Public Schools Culture and Safety Manager Carrie Bunger. Welcome, Carrie.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
Mason City Schools Public Information Officer Tracy Carson. Thanks for coming, Tracy.
Thanks so much for having us, Michael.
And University of Cincinnati College of Allied Health Sciences School of Social Work Assistant Professor Dr. Jennifer Wright Berryman. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you so much.
And a little later, we'll move our focus to suicide and adults and some preventative measures being put in place. And we'll be joined then by a representative from the Talbert House. We also want to hear from you on this topic. Give us a call, 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org or look us up on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to include some in the show today. So difficult topic that we're all joined together today to discuss. We've got representatives here from school districts that are unfortunately not unfamiliar with the tragedy associated with young students dying by suicide. 17-year-old student at Mason High School, an 8-year-old student at Carson School, part of the Cincinnati Public School System. I want each of you first to help us understand what kind of impact do these tragedies have on your district, your people, your students? And we can start with either of you.
You know, there is no worse day than the day that you come in and you call your staff together to share that a student has died by suicide. It's just, it is truly one of the worst things that happens in a school community, but it ripples out. Because when we have a young person who dies by suicide, it doesn't just end at school. It impacts an entire community, and you grieve together. And so what we're kind of have been doing in Mason, particularly over the last 2 years, has been working really hard to talk as a community about that impact. And then what we see is hope, that there actually are things we can do to prevent suicide.
And Carrie, is that the same for Cincinnati?
So Cincinnati has over 35,000 students, very large family. And when one student dies by suicide, the whole family is grieving together and very devastated, working hard through that process in order to prevent students from feeling that level of despair moving forward. So Cincinnati Public Schools is committed to providing intervention and postvention work after suicide, but also really looking hard into what can we do to support our students in terms of their social-emotional learning and providing positive behavior intervention supports from a preventative standpoint. So absolutely, we are devastated when any student is hurting, let alone a student that dies by suicide. As a result, we are addressing that as well as building and continuing to build the prevention efforts throughout the district.
Each school year, unfortunately, school districts across the area have to deal with some kind of tragedy involving students. Maybe a student's life is taken in a car crash or by an illness or through some other accident. Mm-hmm. Is there a difference when suicide is involved in response, in the response or the reaction?
Go ahead.
You know, in Mason, I think we've been on an evolving learning journey about how we talk about suicide. So if I think about 10 years ago, when a student would die by suicide, it was kind of, we were all concerned about contagion. And that was sort of what the research was sharing, that we had to be very, we weren't just using the words. We weren't talking about it. And what we've learned based on talking to our mental health prevention folks is that's actually the worst thing we can do. We need to be explicit about what happened. And I think that is helping to make sure that we are honest about the cause of death, so it's not creating this even more, why are the grown-ups not addressing our concerns? At the same time, we are also, there is a level of grappling with wanting to honor families' wishes. So, you know, we always are really sensitive to that. And some families, the strength that they have of allowing a community to come together and grieve with them is really powerful. And so we've been really grateful to have been part of that journey with some of our families. But it is, you know, a lot of times we're trying to rely on our mental health professionals as well as the family themselves and taking our cues and then trying to support our students in that grieving process.
And Carrie, what's the experience like in Cincinnati when it comes to suicide being the issue that you're having to react to rather than a car accident or something else?
So to your question, Michael, yes, there is a difference between if a student dies due to an accident or a long-time illness versus a student who dies by suicide. Our crisis team, it leads the Cincinnati area in terms of having mental health professionals that address those concerns and flood in for support for our adults and our children in those times. What we have found and what our friend from Mason has spoken to is that you do have to be careful of the language that's used and how the message is portrayed. So we've learned that we need to be honest and explicit, but we also need to be developmentally appropriate. We need to honor the wishes and the needs of our parents in terms of what they want to have shared. For example, as a building assistant principal, I had to face the situation of within a suicide, you don't want to have a permanent memorial. And people think as an administrator, you're being callous and rude and because you don't want to have that permanent memorial. But that type of romanticizing of suicide does have that concern with contagion moving forward. Whereas if it was a student who died due to cancer, you might have a stool or a garden that's dedicated to that child. We don't do the same thing for a student by suicide. And it's not because we don't care about that child or that child, their life is any less than any other child. It's just the fact that for the living and concern for the living, we need to be mindful of what we do in terms of those memorials. So yes, there's a difference in terms of that at Cincinnati Public Schools.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join in on this conversation. And before we turn to the doctor on our panel today, I just want to ask both of the district representatives, what does it mean exactly when we hear that counselors will be on hand? You know, after one of these tragedies, again, regardless of whether it's a suicide or a car accident or an illness, that counselors will be at school. What does that mean exactly when the students go to see one of these counselors, Tracy? What happens?
So in our district, we have 10,500 students in our schools. And so we have a lot of counselors in all of our buildings. And because we're a large district, but at the same time, a small community, we know we're never going to pull every counselor out of every school to go because the impact of grief can be helped. You know, even if it was a high school student, there might be a middle school sibling and there are friends that know. So, but we do have enough counselors that we're going to add counselors to that building. And what we tend to do is we always try to share the information with families first so that they know what we're sharing with their students in a developmentally appropriate way. And then we invite any student who is hurting, who needs more time, to go to kind of a very welcoming, safe place to go talk with a counselor, typically someone that they actually even already know and have a relationship with. So that helps. There are times where if it's a big enough event, we just, our school family did lose a student, not to suicide, but to it was an illness at our elementary level just 2 weeks ago. We're still really grieving that loss. And in that case, that was a smaller school, wouldn't have as many counselors. So we're pulling from other schools, but they're very well versed and they're supporting those students in those needs.
And Carrie, in a district as large as Cincinnati, I know you've got a lot of counselors. Mm-hmm. Are they all pulled in from different corners to come in and deal with one of these issues?
So at Cincinnati Public Schools, we are grateful in that we have additional resources in terms of social workers. We have school counselors in our high schools, and then we have our school psychologists. So we have teams that are set out, and then based upon the need and the number of schools impacted, then a team or two or just whatever, it depends on the situation, is sent. Before the team is sent, there's a discussion between the assistant superintendent and the person who runs our crisis teams and the building principal. The building principal is charged with making sure that we have communication with our families in a way that also addresses the parents' needs, the parents of the child that passed away. Our counselors will typically be broken up in between supporting the adults, so the teachers and the staff that's in the building, because they are greatly impacted by the grief, as well as the students. We'll usually have counselors in an open area like a library where the kids can come. And then if they are showing additional concerns, then they may go to a private area to receive more intensive counseling. And then we have someone that's typically in the office that can address the adult needs without the adults having to go in front of the kids and express their concern and grief at that time. So that's typically what it looks like. And sometimes there's follow-up. So after a child's funeral, for example, we may have the crisis team come back because all of those feelings then resurface for our students, and then we need to help them process through that again.
Dr. Jennifer Wright Berryman is an assistant professor at the University of Cincinnati College of Allied Health Sciences School of Social Work. I want to ask you, what are some of the symptoms or warning signs that a young person may be having these thoughts about suicide?
So a lot of kids who we have, we're observing sudden behavior changes, kids who might start using substances, kids who start isolating, academic failure or academic success, interestingly, and kids who are starting to post things on social media that are of concern. They're putting out some sort of red flags, and they're talking – sometimes they're even talking about suicide, and they're talking about taking their own life. Those are a number of the things that we see. Sometimes they start giving away their prized possessions. Sometimes they quit a beloved sports team or the drama team or, you know – so a lot of times they stop doing what they love to do because they are feeling isolated and excluded, even if they're not in reality being isolated. So,
this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with our discussion about youth suicide. We're joined by Cincinnati Public Schools Culture and Safety Manager Carrie Bunger, Mason City Schools Public Information Officer Tracy Carson, and University of Cincinnati College of Allied Health Sciences School of Social Work Assistant Professor Dr. Jennifer Wright Berryman. If you want to join us in this conversation, it's 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Let's go to the phone lines. We have Bernadine on the line. Did you have a question or comment, Bernadine?
I do. Thank you so much. I really think that Cincinnati Public Schools representative that was just really, really mistaken. She said that they don't have a memorial for the suicide students because of copycat. And that is so condescending to the other students. To think that a student is going to commit suicide because of a copycat, that child has a lot of problems anyway, might have committed suicide down the road. So I'm a mental health professional, and I have worked with teenagers in the hospital and out of the hospital. And their heart and their mind is so much more mature than most people give them credit for. So to not have a memorial for a suicide student, I think is just so wrong-headed. It's just not okay.
Okay, Bernadine, we appreciate your call. We'll give them the chance to respond. Carrie, did you want to elaborate a little bit more on the reason the district has the policy it has?
Absolutely, and Bernadine, I thank you for bringing up this important issue. So in terms of memorial, I'm speaking to permanent memorials within the school walls or within the district. So we can certainly not prohibit or stop those types of memorials outside of the building, but here at school, it certainly has been found that permanent memorials, when it's death by suicide, it does send a message, and it has been shown through research in the mental health field, which my background is in school psychology, to impact contagion, to romanticize, and for those students, for the living that may be at that cusp of, I'm feeling a level of despair. It is something that we have been very mindful of in terms of honoring the living and making sure that we are providing proactive strategies to help support those students that are with us and coming through the school walls. That is not to undermine or diminish our care for the student that has died. It's in addressing the living and making sure that those students receive the environmental supports as well as the social, emotional, and mental health supports that they need moving forward.
And Jennifer, did you want to add something to that?
The main reason that we do not set up memorials for students who have died by suicide is we don't typically do memorials for students on school grounds, regardless of how they die. We treat all deaths the same. The other reason is if I'm a student who is in complete despair and on, as Dr. Bunker put it, you know, sort of on that level of despair where I'm also considering suicide, I'm passing by a memorial on a daily basis of a student who ended their pain. And I'm like, oh gosh, they are no longer in pain anymore. And I see that every single day. It could encourage me. It could put me in a place of peace, seeing that someone else is now in peace and being reminded of that. So that is why we don't do memorials, in particular for kids who have died from suicide, because the idea is that they've ended their pain, and we don't want children to consider that option for themselves.
I want to share some statistics. The suicide rate for people ages 10 through 17 was up 70% between 2006 and 2016. That's according to the latest data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Black children commit suicide less often than white students, but the increase in the suicide rate for black students was higher, up 77%. Overall, the suicide rate for all Americans was up 33% in 2017 from 1999, 47,000 Americans died by suicide. So it seems the situation is worsening. So let's talk about the type of programming or policies or organizing that's being done within the districts to improve these numbers. Tracy, we'll start with you and Mason.
Thanks, Michael. Those numbers are what keep us up at night. And they have galvanized us to say, what can we do? And in Mason, what we recognized was that students were talking to peers about the idea that they were considering suicide, but we weren't always hearing about it. They were sharing it with their friends. They were texting it late at night at 2 o'clock in the morning, and they were having these conversations, but they weren't telling their parents. They weren't telling their school counselor. And so what we came upon last year, we made a decision to start to use a program at our high school that we've now implemented as a really important class, which is called Hope Squad. And so students themselves go through and in the spring, and they, in fact, we are doing it right now for next year, they nominate three people who they feel comfortable telling something important to. And the magic of the program is it isn't that these are kids who get nominated by a principal. It isn't a popularity. It's who do I go to when I need help? And then those kids are then people do look that list over. We ask their parents if they're okay with them being part of this class. We ask those kids if they're in part of this class. And then their whole goal is to refer their friends for help. So we give those students really important tools on learning how to address, to understand what are the warning signs of suicide. And then most importantly, their job is not to then counsel their friends, which is kind of the position that they've been in, but we've actually empowered them with the tools to know, how do I keep a conversation going? And then how do I refer them to help? And so that has been a really important step for us this year. We have watched, we've had a Safe Schools tip line for many years. And 56% of our tips this year, we've had 155 tips about school safety. 56% of those tips have been concerns about mental health. And of those, 12 have been directly suicide related. Those coming from kids themselves saying, I'm concerned about a classmate. They need help. And then we're able to get them the help.
Is this part of the event that's coming up on Monday at the Sharonville Convention mm-hmm. Center? Okay. So this is selected students from various schools. It's not open to the public. It's put on by Grant Us Hope.
Yes.
Okay. So 500 students and advisors from schools across Ohio will attend this first ever Ohio Hope Squad conference. I want to just reference some of the schools that are included: Anderson, Fairfield, Crossroads Middle, Deer Park High, Lakota East and West, Loveland High and Middle, Mason High, Milford High, Oak Hills High, St. Margaret of York Middle, Summit Country Day, Turpin, and West Clare. Claremont Middle, and then we've got advisors coming from a variety of local schools as well. Carrie, is it important that students be able to talk to other students about this issue? Is there an increased benefit to that peer-to-peer communication?
Absolutely, because oftentimes, especially with our teenagers, adults don't know anything. So if a student is going to or a child's going to reach out to someone, it's going to be their peer and not to us right away. So we need to build an army or a squad to help so that our students, our children feel empowered that if something, if they hear a statement that they know what to do. And we don't expect our peers to be mental health professionals, but we do expect them to, if they hear something, to say something. So in terms of Cincinnati Public Schools, we have peer-to-peer prevention programs. We're piloting Hope Squads at Cincinnati Public Schools at a few of our schools. We certainly are a proponent of and teach to even our elementary students to say something, meaning that there is a difference between telling and tattling, and that peer piece is so critical because that's how we're going to save lives, because it's going to be over Snapchat, Facebook Live, where we're going to get the information, not in seventh bell math class. It's just the reality of the situation. So we need to empower our children and our for that peer-to-peer relationship piece.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to weigh in. We've got Nancy on the line. Nancy, did you have a question or comment? Hi, do we have Nancy on the line?
Good afternoon. I work a lot in the Hispanic immigrant population. And this is a really, really critical issue. 23% of Latinas have suicidal ideation, 12% attempt. That's higher than any other demographic group. I think CPS has done an amazing job of having bilingual therapists in the schools, whether they are there on contract from other agencies like Talbert House or Dater High School recently hired a full-time person. Made a huge difference. I know that the Princeton School District and the high school, they had two suicide attempts just in December. This is a really vital area, and you gave some figures about disparities between African-American and white suicide issues, but the growing immigrant populations, which of course include many, many Nepalis, as well as others, are students who are really caught in by a lot of historical and personal trauma.
Nancy, we appreciate you providing those statistics to us and that perspective. Thanks for your call. That was Nancy. Is that something that you're seeing in your districts, dealing with this rise in immigrant population, and is there a unique way to handle the struggles that they're feeling?
I think we have to be very mindful of culture. So as a school psychologist, depending on the families that I'm speaking to, if I call and I say I'm Dr. Carrie Bunger and I'm the psychologist, they may hang up on me. Using the term mental health, that is seen as a weakness in some cultures. So we have to be far more sensitive to that. I'd be interested to hear from others their take, but I appreciate Nancy's perspective, and I think we have to honor the fact that mental health can be seen as a very bad word, and that children and adults may have a great hesitancy towards getting those supports because culturally it's seen as an internal weakness, not something to be even considered.
Well, let's go to Tracy and then Jennifer on this.
I agree wholeheartedly. I think as we think about in our district, one of our what we call our big rocks is inclusive excellence. Mm-hmm. And when we're looking at that, we're looking at the whole, who somebody is. And so understanding those lenses and what they've brought for in Mason, many of our we have 75 languages spoken in our schools, and it's difficult to be an expert on any one of those things. But what we know, leaning in most importantly, is to understand that person's journey. We say your story matters. Mm-hmm. And so we want to get to know that student, their family, and know how we can help serve them.
And Jennifer, as a doctor and a scholar, what do you find is the experience of an immigrant when it comes to dealing with their mental health or suicidal tendencies?
I think sometimes we forget to consider the environment in which a person has to survive. So when we are asking children to survive in environments in which they're not acculturated, we fail to recognize their distress and their despair. And so we have to be talking to kids from our Latino, Latina population. We have to be talking to kids from the variety of immigrant populations that we see coming into our area. And we have to ask them, what is causing your stress? What is causing your despair? And we have to watch them and we have to observe them and we have to monitor them, because at any point that despair could turn. And then we're starting to see suicide, you know, sort of warning signs, but they might look different. And we have to encourage those questions between peers so that we can identify them early and get them to adults for help.
So we just have a couple of minutes left. There's a couple things left that I would like to get to before I let you all leave. Bullying, right? This is an issue that's often cited when a kid dies by suicide. So what role do anti-bullying programs play in your anti-suicide programming?
In Mason, it's interesting. Our data hasn't shown necessarily that many of our kind of issues, that suicidal ideation has come from being bullied, but we completely believe that we have to grow upstanders. And so a part of having a welcoming, inclusive culture means that I am equipped to stand up for a friend. I have the ability to say, that's not okay. You know, that isn't, and I get the tools to do that. So we continue to be on that journey of growing kind kids who also have the tools to stand up for a friend who's being bullied. And the other thing is also thinking about the bully too. And so wrapping our arms around what's going on that's creating those kinds of issues.
And in Cincinnati?
So in Cincinnati Public Schools, we have something called the bully notification button, or the bully button, that anyone in the community can press and make a concern or allegation. And those are sent to the building of concern.